It is Thursday, April 23rd. Joining us for a remote talk shop this morning is Brian and Roberta from St. Joseph Hospital.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Roberta. How are you doing so far?
I'm doing well, Brian. Thanks for having me today.
You betcha, betcha. Oh, boy. Hey, Roberta, I guess before we get things rolling, how are things going at St. Joe's and throughout the entire healthcare community in Humboldt and Delaware County? Are things kind of starting to become somewhat predictable as far as what is going on out there?
Well, I think there's been really incredible collaboration across the area between the various healthcare entities and public health over the last few months as we really ramped up extensive efforts to be prepared to handle the whole COVID-19 pandemic. It's been a stressful time for all healthcare institutions as we, while we suspended some services, but we had to do a lot of planning, education, and adjustments, even in facilities and processes. And so there's been a lot of hard work, but I think that people should know that there's really been some superb communication and collaboration between everybody. At St. Joseph Health, we've done a lot of work to create some special isolation units and areas of the hospital that are specifically designed for handling patients who are in this special isolation. And we've, across both of our hospitals, done a lot of work training staff, making sure that they understand how best to protect themselves and how to care for patients. So it's I think everyone in healthcare right now is has been running on the adrenaline and the necessity of working to be prepared. And now we're at a little bit of a lull where I feel like we're quite well prepared and things are actually relatively quiet. And we're just looking ahead towards what are the next months going to bring us.
Now, you're kind of an ace in this game. The numbers that we have had, are any idea what percentage that the tests are reflecting? Is it accurate? Is it, you think, maybe 10% of what is going on out there? What kind of sense do you have? Because I know the numbers are starting to become, discussed, I guess, what the percentages are and things of that nature. Do you have any sense about that?
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have the kind of testing that would really allow a quick answer on that. So under most circumstances, if you've had an epidemic like this, you would do prevalence testing in the community to pick up not only who are the people sick enough to come to an emergency room or the hospital, but who are the people out in the community who have such mild disease that it really is, it escapes notice. And so we are not yet at a place where we can figure that out. I think what we know in Humboldt is that and compared to many areas in California and across, the country, Humboldt has been has tested pretty aggressively. I think we've done over 1,600 tests as of last Saturday. And so we, a fair amount of tests have been done to give us, but it's been done in patients who meet certain criteria. And we know that there have to be some people who've had this and have had mild disease, but I don't know a percentage.
Has it been a surprise, either the amount that we've had or the lack of having more test positive or at least to show some of the more overt signs?
So I think Humboldt is unique in some ways, but similar maybe to some other more remote rural communities in how few cases we've had. And I believe that is directionally correct, right? That if we had more undiagnosed, we would be picking things up in the hospital. There would be more sick people, more people on ventilators. And so I think that this tells us what the general sense of what's in our community. I think a few things are driving that. Our remoteness has some impact, but travel is certainly an issue. the fact that we work closely with public health. When our very first case in February came up, someone came to the ER, and you know, the people were knowledgeable, and I was on the phone on a Sunday night with Dr. Frankovich, who is a public health officer, trying to sort through, can we get them tested? Can we figure this out? And I think public health has worked very effectively at looking at every case and doing what's called contact tracing to try to quarantine people who might have been exposed. And so for Humboldt, between, I think, really aggressive public health interventions and our relatively low numbers, I think we've been able to control what could have been bigger at this point. And I think with, from the community perspective, the willingness to do social distancing and take it seriously, even though at big numbers, has definitely had an impact on our environment. From the hospital standpoint, we, you know, as an infectious disease doc, I was particularly sensitive to the kind of things that might be important to do. And so we put in some restrictions even before they were mandated. So we canceled some of our events. We encouraged people not to go to other events. We had people coming from outside of Humboldt to work masking for 14 days because we didn't know if they might be exposed if they were working in LA or the Bay Area. So we also were quite aggressive on the hospital side to try to contain this. Despite all that,
CINS news. We'll continue with that in just a sec. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy Radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Roberta Luskin-Hawk, the head honcho. Forget about the title. The head honcho at St. Joe's. Roberta, the reference you made in the last segment about being an infectious disease doc, that is kind of intriguing, one, because we don't get an awful lot of those type folks up here. But it's got to give you a little bit of an insight of what is going on, not only what we are exposed to through the media, but also what's coming in through the information channels that are a little bit more privileged. Are you getting a sense, does the community really know what this thing is, or does anybody really know what this thing is?
Well, I mean, I will say that we've learned a lot about it quickly, that even its genetic sequence was known very quickly after the outbreak in China. We're learning more about how it spread and the efficiency of that. We're learning more about how many, that many patients have no symptoms or mild symptoms. But there are still unanswered questions. The unanswered questions are what treatments make a difference, whether or not you can get infected a second time, what does that mean? There's some tests that are being developed look like they're going to be very good, and some maybe not as good. So, looking at which tests are the best to the question. So we're actively learning. I think in this day and age, my work was in HIV research years and years ago. We're learning a lot faster than we used to, but we don't know it all yet.
You've also indicated fatigue. That there was the adrenaline rush early on, and I think anybody who's been in any kind of a compressed time frame gets that. But at some point, it kind of goes, and everybody relaxes, and the adrenaline isn't there, and then the fatigue will set in. Do you have things in place to help to avoid that relaxation or demotivated period for the workers that are dealing with this on a hour-by-hour basis?
There's a number of things. Yeah, there's a whole kind of phase of disaster that may be kind of pertinent, right? So you get, you know, kind of the impact period, the period where everyone's heroic and rushing in, a honeymoon where you feel like you're getting things in line. And then often there can be a period of disillusionment where it's like, oh my God, this is just ongoing, or we're still seeing issues. And then you go to reconstruction. So we're very early in this. We have a lot of resources for the caregivers to help them. Starting at the most basic level, reinforcing education, putting people on in areas to even observe how people are putting on their protective equipment to reassure them. And then online, you know, St. Joseph Health is part of Providence. And so because there's 51 hospitals across the 7-state area, a lot of resources that we wouldn't have if we were just an isolated rural hospital. So we have online stress evaluation. We have mindfulness virtual classes online. Our chief of mission integration does spiritual care, and she does some work with staff. We also have someone who's in charge of our caregiver as well as patient experience, and she's developed some resources for people, everything from an app like Calm or one of the other meditation apps to other interactive behavioral health if you need it. So there are a lot of resources coming to bear, and we're going to need them.
One of the things that I've been intrigued, I've had, let's just call it a higher than normal interaction with my regular GP, general practitioner or family doctor in the last little bit. I was intrigued by and kind of a little curious about how serious this thing was taken early on. Did you guys have an indication that this was going to be the real deal instead of like the swine flu or the bird flu and some of these previous things that really never manifested itself?
I think as we followed what was in the media early on, when we looked at what was going on with China, it certainly appeared to me as an infectious disease doc that this was going to be a big deal, but I didn't know how big, right? And I had friends where we had conversations, and I said, oh, I think it's really going to be like the flu. I kind of came back, this isn't the flu, no one's immune, it looks like a lot of people are dying in China. I think that we're dealing with something bigger. But there wasn't, you know, full transparency about exactly what was going on there either. And so it wasn't until, we saw more spread, we saw it marching across the world, that it became clear how devastating it could be. So I think I had some suspicion, but no, I don't think I would ever say that fully anticipated all this.
Yeah, I would think as a healthcare professional, not having full access to the information or some of the information being held back, the international stuff, really could have caused a whole lot more problems than what it did. But do you think that lag period, did it set us up for more problems, or was our government kind of rolling with this early on to help mediate some of the potential impacts?
Yeah, I don't think I know the full answer. I mean, there's no question that we got caught in a lag in our testing capabilities, which would have kept us much, much more informed. The CDC's, I guess, shared some of what happened with contamination in the lab and slowed them down. In all of this, I would say that, you know, there are many people who early on tried to characterize what was happening, and I think in my mind, my single source of truth was always Dr. Anthony Fauci. I had the privilege of doing some work with him, decades ago in the AIDS epidemic. And to me, he was a trusted voice in, you know, what we know and what we don't know, and that it was evolving. But I think that's where we're at today.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Hi, this is Brian Papstein. This afternoon, Humboldt County Health Officer Teresa Fankovic is having a press conference and will be announcing the formalization of our current practices, formerly referenced as shelter in place.
What does this mean? How does it impact you? Find out as we will be talking with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel this afternoon. Stay tuned here in the 4 o'clock hour. You'll be able to hear that interview in its entirety, and we'll have it on our website later this afternoon.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Roberta Luskin-Ock, the Chief Executive for St. Joe's Humboldt County. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redec, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Roberta, one of the challenges, I think, is you're in the unique position where you're kind of at the apex of the fulcrum. On one side, you've got all of the public safety concerns, and I would suggest you probably are the lead dog there for most of us. And then on the other side, you've got the economic responsibilities of running one of the larger employment units in Humboldt County. When you hear the discussions about the economics, and you're looking at your bottom line, but you're also looking at the public safety, how do you weigh that one out?
So, it's been a big discussion recently as hospitals across the country are experiencing, just dramatic drops in the number of people we serve in the ER, the number of people in the hospital, any revenue related to elective surgeries or procedures is gone. And so, people don't have enough work to do, and that is certainly an impact. We made a conscious decision as a healthcare, infrastructure to pause, knowing all that would happen. I mean, it was viewed as a necessary thing to interrupt what was going on and to establish enough personal protective equipment. We actually now are at a place where we're going to be able to start opening up more of our healthcare services soon. Even in shelter in place, there are many essential healthcare services that we said, well, if they could wait a couple weeks, let's do that. If they can wait a month, but we're now in this for the long haul. And over the next few weeks, you'll see hospitals opening up services, both St. Joseph Hospital in Eureka, certainly Redwood Memorial Fortuna, but also Mad River. We've been in communication with them and with public health, trying to come up with a consistent approach that makes sense, so that we now know that we have enough equipment to protect, to have people throughout our hospitals wearing masks in clinical area, to bring patients in a way that keeps them safe, and to do important surgeries and procedures that shouldn't wait, 12 to 18 months until there's a vaccine, which is, the wait could be very, very long. So we're about to, over the next week or two, start to do more as we test aggressively and work closely with our patients. Someone who's coming in for a surgery that can be planned should actually be self-quarantined at home for, a week before they come in. And so there will be some joint expectations about how to do that safely.
So the process changes a little bit, but you're going to start to see some momentum and inertia getting back to where we were.
Absolutely. Because otherwise we risk the people who have critical health care needs, that will end up having, untreated diabetes, hypertension, where we'll see heart attacks and strokes and cancers that diagnosis gets delayed. So while we're not doing, cosmetic surgery, there's a lot of other things where people are in pain, have needed a surgery for a long time, where we can safely do it, and so that's the plan.
Cosmetic surgery? Really?
No, we're not doing that. That was on the
back. Yeah, make me pretty, doctor, please. Just make sure I can play the piano again, right?
Someone that has an orthopedic injury pulls a muscle. We can probably
Yeah, don't worry, I'll be in touch. Oh, gee. We're hearing now a number of different states throughout the country talking about rolling back and going into a phase one I guess, return to normal. It would be what it is, the masks and paying attention and not getting too close and small gatherings and things like that. This continuum of getting back to wherever it is that we're headed, how long do you think that's going to take? Is that a 3 months, 6 months, 12 months? What kind of thoughts do you have in that arena?
So, I think anyone who gives you your thoughts has to really start with saying, I don't know. That we realistically, I think that, again, people like Dr. Fauci are saying things won't be normal until we have a vaccine, and vaccines have to be tested. They might get into healthcare workers at best, you know, sometime over the next, you know, next fall or winter. But we've been talking about some 12 to 18 months before, if a good vaccine is developed, it can be broadly used. And so the world, I think, won't be entirely normal until all that happens. But a gradual, you know, I think some relaxation will happen, and we're going to really have to make sure that we don't abuse it. I have no doubt that if we today said business as usual, life back to the way we know it and love it, that we would have a huge surge in cases and people would die. If we relax our measures, we probably will still see some increase. And so we're trying to walk a fine line between knowing that society and people have to move forward to some extent, but what's the safest possible way to do that?
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:42. We will be back.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time, 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning. You know, it's one of the weird things. We've been back in the morning now for, I don't know, 6-7 years, and I'm reverting to the afternoon thing periodically. It's, I don't know, it's an out-of-body experience. We're talking shop with Roberta Luskin Hawk. This concept with normalization, do you think there will be a normal? I've been seeing so much discussing the new normal, and whatever that is going to be different. And because this, for a lot of folks, this is one of those life-defining periods that they'll be telling their kids and their grandkids about.
Yeah, I do agree that this is one of those once-in-a-half-year episodes that everyone is going to be talking about. I think that there's some normal that will look different. One of the things that struck me is it's a very tiny silver lining in what's been a lot of tragedy and loss, is that that organizations have had to be creative and really have had to accelerate how we use technology. And in healthcare, we've been talking about using technology for a long time, and understanding that people, especially the younger generation, they don't really want to have their healthcare the way that their parents used to have it. You know, you drive to the doctor, you sit in the office, you wait. That there's some value in using telemedicine and other things. So what I've seen already through Providence, what the kinds of things we have, like on our website for the hospital, if you go in, you can see a coronavirus assessment tool. It actually uses artificial intelligence, and you answer questions, and it gives you some general guidance. Did you go to your doctor? Do you need to go to the ER? So using online tools to help people understand their risk, understand their health, and using artificial intelligence that way is a benefit of all. We also have virtual visits. Many of the doctors in our community and doctors around the country are available to people in Humboldt by doing a virtual visit online, either through our hospital website where there is a fee, or through Open Door, or through the St. Joseph Medical Group if they have a doctor there. You can do all kinds of visits with primary care docs, even with some surgical specialties. And some of that will be retained. We also developed some telemedicine home monitoring capabilities where if people have COVID and they're not sick enough to stay in the hospital, but we're worried about them. Let's say they're older or they have some underlying lung disease. We now have a setup where we can give them something to measure their oxygen at home, call them daily. We call that, home monitoring, and it's a type of telemedicine. And then we have these computers that we could put in a person's room to talk to them either with a doc who's in Humboldt or potentially a doc who has more time on their hands who's sitting in Texas or Oregon, so that if we have a big surge, we can use that. All of that use of technology to enable healthcare, I think, actually may be part of the new normal, where we still will get back to going to visit your doctor and coming to the hospital for testing and surgery. But I'm hoping that we actually learn more about how to be more efficient and respond to patients in novel ways that are actually better for the community.
So rather than a paradigm shift, it's more just of a more efficient model. And certainly I would suspect that those of us on the outside, the consumer base, our expectations have now increased a little bit as well.
Yeah, I think once you've, I actually had a telemedicine visit with my doc, and it was kind of fun. It's like, oh, I didn't have to leave the office. I got something done that I needed to do. One of the barriers had been is that many types of insurers wouldn't pay for those kinds of visits. They just weren't included in either Medicare or public aid. There were all kinds of barriers to that. And so I'm hoping that the world, we can get reorganized in a way that allows us to use everyone's time most effectively and efficiently, and I think it'll improve care.
Well, it will be interesting to see how we all make out on this thing. Thanks for coming by and participating this morning.
Thanks for including me in the conversation. I appreciate it.
All righty, Roberta. Enjoy your day.
You too. Take care.